You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
1 Peter 5. So this book, just to sort of introduce you to what we're reading here, it's a letter written by Peter to a group of Christians who are scattered. And the occasion for the letter is that he is giving them instructions for how to navigate a very difficult trial. He calls it a fiery ordeal. And so what's happening is the recipients of this letter are beginning to experience persecution in their culture in Rome. People, you know, the culture is beginning to turn on them. They're experiencing rejection and slander and unjust treatment at the hands of their neighbors, which is awful. And so Peter's writing them to help them navigate this in a godly way. How do we respond with integrity and love? Now, this last section of the book that we're in, things are getting kind of real. You know, he's wrapping it up, and he's basically been focused on the topic of suffering. That even if we do everything right, even if we follow after Jesus' footsteps, we need to be prepared and ready to suffer. And then the last time we studied, he turned aside from the general audience, which was the whole church, to just the leaders. So we studied this passage that was just focused on the elders. He says, "Therefore, I urge the elders among you to shepherd the flock of God among you." So he has a specific instruction for the leaders. There's a need in the fiery ordeal. The need for you is to step up and lead. And then in our passage today, he does the same thing. He turns aside to another group and he says, "You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. And all of you, clothe yourself with humility toward one another. Because God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, so that he may exalt you at the proper time, having cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you." So this is our passage for today, just these three verses. And they're on a theme. Can you catch the theme? It's humility. Three different times in this passage, he uses this word, or a form of this word. The word simply means to make low. It's very literal. He's saying, lower yourselves. And actually, it's kind of cool. This is lost on us as modern readers, but when you look at through the passage, almost all of the language is like above and below language, up and down language, lower yourself. So look here, be subject to each other. That means to literally put yourself under, to put yourself under. And all of you, clothe yourself with humility. The word there is to think of yourself in a lower way. Lower yourself in your thinking about yourself. Because God is opposed to the proud, which means thinking highly, literally high thoughts of yourself, and gives grace to the lowly. Therefore, lower yourselves under the mighty hand of God so that he may exalt you or lift up. You see what I'm saying? The whole passage. Up, down, up, down. And so the main point right here, clothe yourselves with humility. That's what we're going to talk about today. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, "Oh, I'm so glad my husband is here to hear this teaching." Or you're thinking, "Oh, I think I left my car running." Yeah, why this topic? It's actually a good question. You know, I was thinking, all the other topics in this book make sense to me in the context. You know, be ready for suffering, that makes sense. Responding to slander, that makes sense. Follow in the footsteps of Jesus, that makes sense when they're suffering. Leaders, we need you to lead, that makes sense. The next passage is about the devil, Satan, and his role, that makes sense. But the second to last topic in the whole book is humility. Make sure to be humble. Why is that his penultimate point of this whole book? And uh, it, it it must mean that it's important. You know, it must mean that it's an essential attitude in when we were in a fiery ordeal, when we're enduring suffering. He's like, one thing, make sure that you stay humble, which I think is kind of fascinating. How does that help us in the fiery ordeal? That's what we're going to look at. Now, he words the main point as an illustration, to clothe yourself, to literally to gird. He's like, put on humility, to think of yourself below, put that on like clothes. That's what he says. And I think that suggests a couple things. One thing is that he is appealing to our volition. There's something that we're supposed to choose. You know, when you wake up in the morning each day, you choose what to put on. And it's not always the same thing. You know, Saturday, you choose to put on sweatpants or whatever, and you go to work, you choose to put on something else. My kids just had their first day of school. And so a lot of thought went into what am I going to clothe myself with on the first day of school. My son chose, after much deliberation, to wear a t-shirt that said, I was told there would be ice cream. That was a calculated decision. He felt like that really represented him and put a good foot forward. That was the choice. It's a deliberate thing you do. He's saying, when you wake up in the morning, you should clothe yourself with a mindset about yourself that is humble. And he says that you should do this toward one another. And that makes sense too, because your clothes, yes, they express something inward maybe, but ultimately, this is how you present yourself to others. You're clothed toward others. And so he's saying that this attitude is something that you actually should have outward toward certain audiences. And I actually counted 5 of them in this passage. And so that's what we're going to study today. Humility. Clothe yourself with humility in 5 different directions. Ready? First one is the most important, so we'll spend the most time on it. And it's right here. Therefore, verse 6, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. We should clothe ourselves with humility toward God. That's like the foundation for everything else that he says. The idea here, just to sort of look at the theological picture for a minute, the first thing to understand is that according to the Bible, there is a created order. That the world we live in has a creator, and that he created it to be a certain way. It has, when you look out at nature, there is an order to nature. Things work a certain way, and it's under his authority. He has the kind of authority that only an author can have. He's a creator, and therefore he has authority, and he's arranged things with authority. Adam and Eve were given authority over the creation. And, very important to note, in that created order, we, human beings, rank below God. That's the beginning of all wisdom right there, okay? God up here, you down here, and you're not the same. So he says, hey, in this fiery ordeal, make sure you acknowledge that fact. Make sure you get that part right. I love how Andrew Murray describes this in his book, Humility. He says, when God created the universe, it was with one object of making the creature, that's us. Andrew Murray refers to us as the creature because we're created. I know it's insulting. Creature. But you're a created, you know, you're not the creator, you're the creature. It was with the one object of making the creature partaker of his perfection and blessedness, and so showing forth in it the glory of his love and wisdom and power. But this was not giving to the creature something which it could possess in itself, a certain life or goodness which it had the charge and disposal, by no means. But as God is the ever-living, ever-present, ever-acting one who upholds all things by the word of his power and in whom all things exist, the relation of the creature to God could only be one of unceasing, absolute, universal dependence. The creature has not only to look back on the origin and first beginning of existence and acknowledge that it there owes everything to God, but also its chief care, its highest virtue, its only happiness now and through all eternity, is to present itself an empty vessel in which God can dwell and manifest his power and goodness. Only happiness. Humility, the place of entire dependence on God, is, from the very nature of things, the first duty and the highest virtue of the creature, and the root of every virtue. This right orientation before God. And the opposite then, so pride, he says, or the loss of this humility, is the root of every sin and evil. Bold thing to say, but pretty hard to argue with. I like to think of this created order thing like a solar system. That's a place you can see it. You know, there's an order in the solar system. Namely, things of small mass are subject to things of large mass, right? The earth goes around the sun, not the other way around. That's the created order. And this idea of humility is basically acknowledging that fact, that I am oriented rightly under God versus not, you know, versus being oriented in any other way. So if a planet says, I don't know, I don't like this solar system business, I think I'm going to trek off on my own into space. No, that would be unnatural. That's against the created order. Or if he said, you know, maybe I need to find something else to orbit. Maybe I'll orbit the moon instead. Or maybe Jupiter should orbit me. Maybe I'm the sun. This is where pride always leads, right? We become oriented around self, because that's the next best thing after God. This really renders two different outlooks on life, two totally divergent ways of looking at God and ourselves and other people. Under humility, I'm rightly submitted under the truth. You know, what's true? Well, what does God say? That's the source of truth. I don't make up truth. But under pride, I'm actually just searching for and trying on truths that will submit to me. That's my truth. Under humility, I'm attracted to God because that's the orbit in which I belong. That's how I view him. It's our pride that makes us repulsed from God. You know that feeling that repulses you from God? That's your pride. Humility or pride has a need to establish self-valuation. Pride's wandering around not sure what to orbit. Is it me? Is it something else? Pride's hungry. Pride's unstable and restless because it has something to prove all the time. But humility accepts God's valuation of me. When under pride, when we encounter another person, well, that's a threat. That's an opportunity to compare or compete. But under humility, I compare myself against God and I take my cue from there. Pride is restless, hungry, and anxious, and humility is at peace. When we factor God out of the equation, we're left with pride as the only alternative. This is an important thing for understanding the world that we live in. We live in a world that has rebelled against God, that has thrown him off. And what happens when we say, I don't believe in the sun? You know, I deny the sun. Well, then pride becomes your only choice. It's like, listen, guys, if there is no God, then you should not be humble. Why would you be humble? If there's no God, then you are the center of the universe, and you should set it up that way, and you should fight for it, and you should contend, and you better not lose. But humility acknowledges this fact that, in fact, there is something bigger than me, and that is actually the foundation of my identity and life. This is the fallen condition of mankind. This is why the world is the way that it is. This is why our world is an arm wrestling match for power and influence. Because we're a bunch of planets not sure whether or not we want to acknowledge the sun. Here's the thing. It says in verse 5, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. He's quoting Proverbs 3 here. It's a very strong statement. God is opposed to the proud. If you come before him and say, nope, I'm not going to submit to you. This verse says that God opposes you in that moment. And that this word, oppose, antitasso. Tasso is to array for battle. You know when like the Roman army would come out and prepare for a battle and they get in all their ranks and their perfect arrays with all of their commanders up front and they're out on the battlefield ready for battle. That's what it means. That's tasso. He says, when you approach God with pride, he arrays for battle against you. He takes the field. And it's kind of a play on words, because what he just commanded him to be subject, hupotasso, means to like fall into rank. So you get what he's saying? He's saying, listen, array yourselves appropriately under God, or else he will array against you. I love the Bible. It's so... Oh, man. God has a problem with human pride. That's the point. He's got a big problem with it. When he's like, but I am the Son. And if we don't agree on that point, we have an issue. Here's C.S. Lewis from Mere Christianity. He says, the essential vice, the utmost evil, is pride. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that, they're mere flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. It is pride which has been the chief cause of misery in every nation and every family since the world began. It's like, this is the root of everything wrong with us. And therefore, humility, as we said before, is the root of all virtue. Do you want to be virtuous? It starts with assuming your position subject to God. To acknowledge his awesomeness, and then act in accordance in our attitudes and actions. So to live out of a settled understanding of reality, which is that you are not God. Here's Murray again. He says, when the creature realizes that this is the true nobility and consents to be with his will, his mind, his affections, the form, the vessel in which the life and glory of God are to work and manifest themselves, he sees that humility is simply acknowledging the truth of his position as creature and yielding to God his place. Yeah, it's humility is the essence of being grounded in reality. Here's one of my favorite passages about it in Romans 12:3. He says, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think. See that height language again. Don't think too highly of yourself, but rather, he says, to think so as to have sound judgment. Don't think too highly of yourselves, but think rationally. You know, the opposite of thinking highly of yourself is sanity. Think about that for a minute. Sophroneo, that word for sound judgment, that does literally mean right, like think in a right mind. When you approach God with pride, you are not in your right mind, is what he's saying. Do you remember in Mark 5, there's that wild demon-possessed character who lives in the tombs and is screaming and cutting himself with rocks, and they chain him up and he breaks the chains. It's a wild passage. And Jesus comes and casts this demon out of him. And it says, and they came to Jesus and saw the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed, and sophroneo, in his right mind. This is the word that Paul uses in Romans 12 to be like, don't think too highly of yourself. Be sane. Also, humility allows us to receive grace. He says, God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Grace is God's undeserved favor. It means charity. It's the gift of God that you do not deserve. And this is what God wants to offer us, but you cannot receive it with pride in the room. You cannot come to God and say, I've got it, and also receive his grace. Instead, we have to come empty-handed to receive from God. And this is an important point because this is really an essential attitude in salvation. When you read in the Bible, how do you become right with God in the first place? The answer is by his grace. You cannot earn that. You cannot deserve it. You cannot convince God that you're acceptable. Instead, we have to come humbly and receive it. Ephesians 2:8. God saved you by his grace when you believed. And you can't take credit for this. It is a gift from God. See that? If you came here this morning wondering, how can I get right with God? Here's the answer right here. Is that you humble yourself before him. You come before him and say, I'm not God and you are. I can't meet your perfect standard, but you can. I need forgiven. I need amnesty. And he says, that's why I sent my son to the cross. You've got it. By grace, you're saved. And you can do that right now today. But it isn't just in salvation that we need humility. It's this principle that God gives grace to the humble. It's also just a wisdom point for life. Our heart is always inclined toward pride, right? Right? I mean, mine is. That's why they put me up here to teach this teaching. They're like, oh, pride, Ben. Our heart is always inclined toward pride, but on any given day and any given moment, I can choose to clothe myself with humility. I can adopt a right-minded attitude. And when you do that, when you don't do that, God says, I am arrayed against you. But when you do that, God says, I see you and I'm with you. And I am motivated to give to you what you don't deserve because you've humbled yourself and taken up the right position. See that? Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God so he may exalt you at the proper time. What's the result? God, when we humble ourselves, God wants to lift us up. That's his response. Peter is just writing what Jesus taught him. Luke 14, Jesus said, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. That's a promise. God says, I reward right thinking and a right approach to me. All right, so number one is we need to humble ourselves toward God. But notice, very important in our passage, it says also, clothe yourself with humility toward one another. That's different than humbling myself before God, right? It's one thing to say, humble yourself before God. You're like, I don't like it, but it's reasonable. It makes sense. If there's a God, I should humble myself before. It's a totally different thing to say, humble yourself before people. Have you met people? It's like, not that great. You know, you're like, I've got to be better than some of these people. God, you want me to humble myself? The idea of putting myself below other people is very hard to swallow. For good reason. We live in a fallen world. People aren't virtuous. People do terrible things when they get authority. It's a real problem to say that we should submit ourselves to other people. And our culture has picked up on this problem. That's why we're super into pride and we view humility as weakness. But this is exactly where he's going with this, because he says, you younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. That's exactly the command. He's saying, make sure in the fiery ordeal to submit to your leaders. And I think nowhere is pride more evident than when it comes to leading and following. This is the dynamic. Leading and following, boy, that's pride is a major issue there. But here's the thing. I think this picture changes when we factor God in at the center of the solar system. These two ideas are related. When I humble myself before God, it actually gives me the right perspective. If I am a planet that's fallen in line under the sun, then that's going to actually coordinate and work out that I can also be subject to other people. We're all going to be coordinated together. Human authority is a feature of the created order. This is part of God's design, actually. Now, we see a corrupt version of it in our world often. But God says, in my design, part of what honors me is that things have authority over other things, and that when that works all in orbit under me, it is good and beautiful and actually a place for love. Having a right orientation toward God allows me to take a right orientation toward others for a couple reasons. One, because I know that's how he designed the world, and two, because I know that I'm not all that. And three, because I know that he will exalt me at the proper time, that he will resolve injustice in time. What are you like when you're under authority? I'm sure you're great. I think a way to think about this is, what would it look like to be clothed with humility when I'm under the authority of someone else? What would that actually look like? See if any of these resonate. I think when we're under authority, pride says something like, I can do it better. My opinion is very important. But what does humility say? It says, you know, God has others in authority. What can I learn from them? It's different with God in the room. Pride says, I'm not getting the recognition I deserve. Rank and titles are extremely important. The pride is obsessed with rank and titles. That's one way you can really sense your pride, is that if you're always fixated in who's in charge, who's above who, either because you're jealously desiring it or because you are, you know, putting them up as, they're the most important. The theme is that the pride always cares about rank. Humility says, God will exalt me in the proper time. I don't really need to worry if I'm getting fair recognition. If I don't get recognition from people, I'll get it from God, which would be better anyway. Pride says, prove to me why I should submit in every single instance. That's my children right there. Prove it. Why should I submit to this rule every time? And also, how can I find fault in you as a leader? Humility says, how can I encourage and pray for my leader's success? How can I get behind their efforts? It's a different mentality. Hebrews 13:17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account, so that they may do this with joy, not groaning, for this would be unhelpful for you. It would be, there's the created order talking right there. It would be better for you if your leaders were able to carry out their work with joy because of your attitude. 1 Thessalonians 5:12, but we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Yeah, that's a tough one. If you find yourself constantly chafing under authority, if that's a theme in your life, then may I suggest considering the role of your pride. And I'm not saying that to insult you. That's, I mean, me too. But what we do is we come and we bend the knee before God and say, what should I do with this attitude that I have about authority? Now, if you hated that part of the teaching, there's good news, because there's always the other side of the coin, right? You younger men, likewise. Did you notice the likewise? Likewise to what? You know, that's whatever preceded this, which was the section to the elders. The way that the younger men are supposed to be in humility is exactly the same as the way that the elders are supposed to be. And just in case you had any shadow of a doubt, the real command in this passage, he makes it explicitly clear. All of you. There's no escape from that. I don't care what your station or rank is. All of you should clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. So we've seen one direction is I should be humble toward God. We've seen another direction, which is I should be humble toward those above me. And now a third direction, I should be humble toward those below me. Just as essential when you're leading as when you're following to be humble. We saw it last week, or 2 weeks ago when we studied. Shepherd the flock of God among you. This is chapter 5, verse 2. Nor yet is domineering over those assigned to your care, but proving to be examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd, I'm under a chief shepherd, I'm supposed to be an example and not domineering over. Jesus said, you know that those who recognize, Jesus said, you know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it's not this way among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. Yeah, he just got done admonishing the elders to be humble with their authority. And then he turns and says, you younger men, likewise, submit and be humble, because God's opposed to the proud. What would it look like to be clothed with humility when I have authority? What would that look like? Pride says, I have authority. Guess that makes me the center of the solar system. Guess it's all up to me. Humility says, no, I serve the chief shepherd by his grace. And I need helped and checked by both God and man. You know, any authority I have is under his authority, and I need checked by him, and I need checked by... In our fellowship, we believe that everybody should be under authority. Even our elders are under authority to each other. No, we believe in teams of leaders. Human authority needs to always be under something else. Pride says, my opinion is very important. And feedback, you have feedback from me? Well, that's a threat to my authority. But humility says, yeah, I'm a fool half the time. I relish feedback. Only God's opinion matters, and that may well come to me from those under me. Pride says, my rank makes me important. Why am I important? I look in the mirror, I'm very important because look at my position of authority. Pride says, every outcome renders a verdict on my worth. What does it mean about me? And also, what are they saying about me? Leadership is funny, or pride is funny, because it can manifest in leadership sometimes in being very overbearing, but it can also be deeply insecure. Like a nervous spider. What do they think? How's it going? Humility says, my security comes only from the grace of God. God has given me a stewardship to carry out in his name. Totally different mentality. Prideful leaders can look overbearing or timid. But again, what's missing? If you're hearing these and you're like, yes, I'm a prideful leader. Okay. Simple solution. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. We simply need to bring God back into the equation, and that will give us sound judgment. Bringing our leadership under God's authority produces humble confidence rather than insecure pride. That's a great way to sum up those two extremes. Pride, you know, if you lead with insecure pride, it's not going to go well. The biblical leader should have a humble confidence. All right, number four. It's bigger than just leading and following. He does apply it to leading and following, but he makes sure to cast the net even broader than that. In the fiery ordeal, make sure that you have clothed yourself with humility toward one another. And in the Bible, the one another passages, these are just the general instructions for how to relate to each other. And there's lots of them. I always hear people talk about love one another and forgive one another. I think this one gets neglected. When was the last time you heard someone talk about clothe yourselves with humility toward one another? But there it is, and we should rank it among them. It's essential for how we relate. In the fiery ordeal, Peter knows, they're going to need each other. They are going to suffer. They are going to go through a trial, and they're going to need to depend on one another. And therefore, make sure to clothe yourselves with humility. Because it's the key to good relationships. This is the example Jesus gave us. You know, Jesus is interesting because all authority in heaven on earth was given to him when he ascended. You know, Jesus actually does belong at the center of the solar system. And yet, what did he do? He put on flesh, submitted himself to the Father. He came to earth. He submitted himself to his own creation. And then he died on the cross for their sins. He washed his disciples' feet. He says, so if I, the Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example so that you would do just as I did for you. I'm showing you how to be toward one another, to be in a race to submit to one another. How can I think about your marriage. Think about your friendships. Think about your work relationships or your relationship with your children. Think about the relationships in your home church. How can I outserve those other people? That ought to be my goal. How can I get under them? Pride is at the heart of most, maybe all, of our relational problems. Think about it. Yeah, Proverbs 13:10. Pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Oh, let's get hit by Andrew Murray again. Consider how all lack of love, all indifference to others' needs, feelings, the weakness of others, all sharp and hasty judgments and utterances, so often excused under the plea of being outright and honest, all manifestations of temper and touchiness and irritation, all feelings of bitterness and estrangement have their root in nothing but pride. Yeah, he's right about that. Get a conflict in your mind. I know you may have to think back years, but think to a time when you had an actual conflict with another human being, and then dare to ask yourself, what role, if any, did my pride play in that conflict? See, did you hear that voice in your head that was like, no, don't think about that question? That was your pride dying. Why is pride so bad for relationships? This would be a great discussion question. We don't do discussion questions in a venue this big, but it would be a good one. Why is it so bad? Here's how I answered my own question. I brainstormed. Because pride is so bad for relationships because it's overconfident and insecure at the same time. Because it has something to prove. It needs you for something for me. Pride is defensive. Pride is competitive. Pride can't apologize. Pride hates to be corrected. Pride won't take help. Pride can only see the other's fault and can't allow that it has a fault of its own. Pride is afraid of being exposed and embarrassed, so it can't be real. Pride makes you fake. I saw some of you snapping a picture of that. Be careful, you just don't just like text that to your, you know, to your wife. Hey, check this out. Meanwhile, humility, I'll say it, humility is the key. You want great relationships? Humble yourself before God and then clothe yourself with humility. It doesn't mean being a doormat. You can have backbone and be humble. Jesus had backbone, but he was humble. It's actually a tremendously strong position to take because I'm in right orbit, rock solid on the truth under God, and I can act that way toward you, but I understand my station. Why is humility so great for relationships? Because it is secure. It can speak the truth because it's speaking from a place of security. It's oriented in reality. It's free from the project of proving your worth. It's free from comparing. It doesn't need people to prop it up, but it can receive help. It doesn't need to hide faults or posture. It's not surprised or threatened by correction. It can own mistakes and ask for forgiveness. It's free from self-obsession and therefore free to genuinely love. This is why he says, you're going into the fiery ordeal. Please make sure you clothe yourselves with humility. Is there a relationship in your life that is fraught right now? Is there one that's been coming to mind as I've been talking? I wonder if one step here might be to say, I don't know what all is going on in this conflict, God, but I know that I need to bring it before you. My first step here is to humble myself before you with it so that I can have sound judgment. And that maybe I'm going to need to go back to this person and say, listen, we still don't agree on this or that, but one thing in this conflict that I can own that's my part is that I have not clothed myself with humility toward you. And that I have responded with pride. You don't hear many apologies for sorry for my prideful response, do you? Which is curious, since we do it all the time. It can really disarm a situation for you to acknowledge your. It doesn't mean that you're wrong. You might be right and proud. So own the proud part so that you can both have sound judgment. Last point. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God so that he may exalt you at the proper time, having cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Merim not, to be troubled with cares. The last direction is toward your worries. And it seems kind of out of place, doesn't it? Because all the other ones are relational. Humble yourself toward God, toward those above you, toward those below you, toward everybody in your life, and your worries. It's really not humble yourself toward your worries. I just did that to be consistent in the PowerPoint. But it's humble yourself toward God in the midst of your worries. And it does seem kind of out of place, but it's not in the context of this book, because I think Peter knows this is the crying need. This is what his audience is facing. They are worried for good reason. They are suffering, and the forecast is for more and worse suffering. And they're like, what do we do? And he says, make sure to humble yourself. He knows that is the need, and he knows that humility really helps. Are you an anxious person? I am an anxious person. Humility really helps. It really does. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. That's what to do with your anxieties, he says. You need to bring it under the hand of the Lord. How does humility help in my worries? Well, because what drives a lot of anxiety is pride. You know what's really stressful? Trying to be God when you're you. If the earth tried to be the sun, it'd probably be super stressed out. When you read books about anxiety and things like that, there are many great approaches to treating anxiety that are very good. But in some of the reading I've done, I've noticed this theme kind of pops up that there's basically two things that the anxious person needs to come to grips with. Okay? Two facts that are not fun but are true. Number one, we need to accept our limitations. You know, the fact is, I live in a world that I can influence, I can impact the world around me, but not completely. And actually, most of the things in the world I can't impact at all. What drives our anxiety is when we get this idea that I need to control the environment around me. If I play my cards right, if I do just such and such the right way, I can avoid problems and suffering by being on top of it. But you can't, because you live on planet Earth, where you are actually quite limited. Number two is accepting uncertainty. You know, anxiety lives in the world of what ifs. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if I get heart disease? What if I get COVID? What if my kids make terrible choices? What if I get hit by a bus? Right? And it drives our anxiety. And the thought what our pride says is, I can figure this out. If I can just forecast and anticipate all the possible problems, then I can be prepared for them. Pride says, I can control it and I can know it. And so we rev our engine trying to do this, but you can't. You could become an expert on heart disease and still die of COVID. You could spend your whole life avoiding COVID and get hit by a bus. You could spend your whole life avoiding buses and get so anxious that you have a heart attack. You know, it's like there's really no... Welcome to the world where things are uncertain and you're very limited. So these points are true and distasteful, right? We don't like them, but I know you can't disprove them. Here's the point, is that having a God with a capital G, God the Almighty, having God in my field of view makes it much easier to accept these facts of life. I'm limited. I'm not in control, but someone is. And I'm in orbit around him. Whew, that's a relief. Life is uncertain. I can't know everything, but God knows everything and is never surprised by anything. I'm not in control, but he is. I'm not all-knowing, but he is. And so I better hitch to his wagon so that I can take all those things and leave them off with him. What should I do? I should humble myself under the mighty hands of God. I love that expression. The hand of God in the Bible That's always an illustration for God's ability to act. He intervenes in history. He has power. He doesn't just sit up there and think and watch and speak. He acts with his hand. And he says, humble yourself under his mighty hand. He is in control. And he cares for you. See, this is very important. It's not just that he's very powerful. He is. But he also cares for you. If you can hold those two facts in your head at the same time, that he is powerful and cares, man, that's someone that you want to get under their orbit. I remember when I was 18 years old, I had this terrible, I had strep throat, and it developed an abscess, and I had all these barbaric procedures, which I can tell you about afterward if you want. I'll spare you. I'll spare you the details. But I had to have a surgery and to remove my tonsils, and it was so problematic that I had to go back 3 times over the next 3 days to have it recauterized. Use your imagination, okay? And it was really discouraging because you keep thinking you're done, and then you have to go back. And I remember that third time, which was the most painful and the most severe. My parents couldn't take me. My grandfather had taken me. And, you know, they did this procedure, and I think I was probably just slumped over in despair, like, will this ever end? And what was interesting was that he didn't say anything. Looking back, he probably didn't know what to say. We sat there in silence in the room. And then I remember that he came over, and he just put his hand on my shoulder. He had these great big hands. And that really helped. And that's what I always think of when I think of this passage. You can't control everything, you can't avoid everything, but you can humble yourself under someone else's hand. My grandpa cared, but he couldn't fix that situation. God cares and can and will exalt you at the proper time. Do you understand? Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Cast your worries on him because he's worried about you. So that he may exalt you. There is a promise here. If you're unduly humiliated, it won't be forever. He will lift you up. And that would have been a great encouragement to his audience who was suffering unjustly. That there is a God that you can take all those worries and you can throw them on him. Have you done that with the things that are troubling you? Just cast them upon him. Because he can do something about it. That's what to do with, you know, when you make that list of things that, here's the things I can control in this situation, here's all the things that I can't control. What do I do with that? Well, go ahead and grieve that you can't control it, and then cast it upon God, who can. We can leave our worries with the one person who can do something. When something is bothering you, how far down the list of things to do is talking to God about it? I'm embarrassed to tell you how far down the list it often is for me. You know, my instinct, when I have a problem, my instinct is, you know, I will complain about it. I will take a nap. I will talk to 5 people about it before it ever occurs to me that I could talk to God about it. Why is that? That's my pride. Pride says, I got it. I can figure it out. Humility says, I can't wait to take this to my Father. When difficulties come, that's my cue that it's time to take up my place under the mighty hand of God. And I think this passage, it is convicting because we're prideful, but it's also tremendously encouraging. Do you see how he's encouraging them? He's reminding them that they've got God in their corner. That's not really the right way to say it. They've been invited into God's corner. And when they acknowledge that, you see, that is a tremendous encouragement for the things that they're facing. So that's God's way. It is hard. It's hard on the pride. But it is the way of truth and freedom and confidence. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lord, thank you for this reminder here, for this instruction.
I suppose it's good that you oppose us when we're proud, because we're out of sorts. But thank you also that you give us the grace and love that we don't deserve when we humble ourselves before you. Thank you for your goodness and your righteousness, Lord. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.